give you pause at all to be appearing to side with a brutal dictator instead of with a fellow American, the former Vice President Joe Biden?
Well, Kim Jong-un made a statement that Joe Biden is a low IQ individual. He probably is, based on his record. I think I agree with him on that.
But in terms of criticism that you're sort of supporting a dictator instead of an American vice president?
Well, when I look at what's been done by our vice president and the president, when I look at the horrible Iran deal that they made, look what happened since I terminated the Iran deal. Look what has happened to Iran. Iran, when I first came into office, they were involved with everything. Now they're pulling back because they've got serious economic problems.
Anybody remember the Dixie Chicks? You just think back. Anyone? Anyone remember the Dixie Chicks? Anyone remember what happened to them? They were doing a concert, I want to say, somewhere in Europe. It was definitely somewhere overseas. And they decided, I mean, this was after the Iraq War had began. And, you know, George Bush had had all his Bushisms, or lots of Bushisms, where he just said these incredibly stupid, ill-informed things. You know, where he would complain about how people need to learn English, but he himself hadn't bothered to learn the language, right? Somebody asked him about Liberians one time, and for whatever reason, he was unaware that Liberian is a culture, it's a race. Thought it was librarians. You know, Laura's a librarian. Oh, God. And the Dixie Chicks decided on stage to say out loud to everybody in the audience that they were embarrassed to be from Texas. Why? Because that's where George W. Bush was from. And the hell that rained down on them is unlike anything that I have ever seen in my short lifetime. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 298. My name is Melvin, and I want to thank you so much for being here. So here we are in the middle of the aughts, and the Dixie Chicks decide to say this. Now, if you're unaware, the Dixie Chicks make country western music. And the thing about country western music is its listeners are overwhelmingly conservative. I was sitting in a pub the other day, and apparently the rodeo is going on right now in Las Vegas. Rodeo, once again, you know, a lot of people from rural areas, a lot of people that listen to country western music, not all, but most. And I noticed that they used to call them rodeo clowns. I'm not sure what they call them now because they actually used to dress up like clowns. And after the guy was bucked off of the bull or whatever, the clowns would get up and do clowny type things and try to distract the bull so that they could get the rider out of there. Well, the dudes now, they're not clowns. Their faces aren't painted. They don't got big floppy shoes. They're not wearing shorts over their pants or with polka dots or anything like that. They're dressed just like the rider is. You know, maybe they're wearing a hat. Maybe they're wearing a vest, you know, maybe just jeans instead of the big puffy pants. And I noticed something. Obviously, all of this stuff is televised. And every surface becomes an advertising surface. And the vests that the rodeo clowns were wearing had advertisements for the Border Patrol. Now think about this for a minute. If you buy ad space on NASCAR, you buy ad space on the rider, you buy ad space on the rodeo clown, you're selling something. You're trying to increase your brand. You're trying to increase your... But for some reason, the ads that were on, and I don't know if this happens every year because I don't watch the rodeo all the time, but the ads were for the border, and it just said the United States Border Patrol. And I go, they're not a for-profit business. What are they doing? And then it hit me, this audience is very likely overwhelmingly full of people who support Donald Trump. And perhaps this kind of thing gets them excited. I still don't see the benefit, but it does kind of make sense. And immigration has obviously absolutely nothing to do with protecting our borders and protecting our jobs, protecting our people, at least not the way it's being carried out. It's racist. It's flat out racist. So when the Dixie Chicks said this to their audience, the audience where they were received quite well. But here in America, they caught holy hell. They came back and their music had been yanked off of country music stations. They were having album burnings. I used to buy a lot of records from pawn shops back when records were a thing. You know, CDs and, well, vinyl's hot, but CDs are sort of starting to lose their steam. But way back then, I remember I'd go in to look at all the used CDs. I mean, I love the hunt. You know, you could always find some gems. And I just noticed that, boom, all just full of Dixie Chicks CDs. So they'd either given them away or decided to do in this public burning. And they said, hey, how dare they speak ill of our president when they're overseas? Now, these are a bunch of musicians who said this one thing. And the tape made it to the internet. Obviously, it made it back here to America. They saw that and they said, not this president, not anybody. It's never okay to speak ill of our president, you know, or one of our elected officials. Politics stops at the water is the old slogan. This president siding with dictators is not a new thing. Being protected by the exact same people who castigated the Dixie Chicks for speaking ill of the president while overseas, and they say, oh, also because we're at war. We're still at war. The hypocrisy is stunning, or at least it should be. And for some reason, this crowd has said that it's okay. Obviously, I'm not pointing out anything that you don't know here, but I want you to take note of this, because whenever anyone else does it, it's a scandal. But if a Republican does it, then it's A-okay. So this statement that he made overseas, where he sided with Kim Jong-un, a man who kills people for fun, who's starving his own people, who murders you if you leave the country, who killed Otto Warmbier, this guy who killed his uncle and fed him to dogs because he was disloyal, this guy who's developing nuclear weapons right now, this guy who has made a puppet out of the United States president, the president decides to go there and side with him and say that, yeah, Joe Biden is low IQ. I agree with that dictator when he said that. I don't want this stuff to become normalized because it's not okay, and it definitely should not be happening. One of the other things that this president does when he doesn't like you is he tweets about you. And he doesn't tweet about you because he wants the world to know about you or because he's got something to say about you. The reason he tweets at you or about you is because all of the terrorists, the white Christian terrorists that support him, he wants them to come after you. We know this because of what happened to Rashid Tlaib and some others. And it's happening to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Anytime Fox News talks ill of her, her death threats spike. Anytime Donald Trump talks about her, especially in tweets, her death threats spike. And the Fresno Grizzlies at Chukchansi Park decided to play a video about Ocasio-Cortez where they labeled her an enemy of freedom. Yeah. And she responded, hey, I don't think you guys realize this, but this kind of an enemy of freedom. Dig this. She wants people to have access to health care. She wants people to be able to afford housing. She wants people to be able to afford food. She wants people to have access to education. She wants people to have a livable wage. Take note. This makes you an enemy of freedom if you want these things. Now, if you want to take those things away from people, well, that's just freedom. That's what that means. So Ocasio-Cortez describes her day. And there's any number of articles. I pulled the one from HuffPo. And she says it's her morning ritual. She sits down to coffee and she goes over photographs. The photographs that are given to her are given to her by the Capitol Police. And it's get to know these faces because these are the men that want to kill you. And there are new pictures every day. It's not every single man, and it's always men, she points out. It's always men. It's not every single man that has sent her a death threat or that Capitol Police have gotten a death threat about her from. They only give her the pictures of the most egregious ones. And they say, learn these faces, because if you encounter these men on your way to work, at work, while you're out getting something to eat, just know that these are the guys that we have intelligence that says they want to kill you. And this is the kind of thing that we have because of what the president does. And he said that he's completely fine with it. It doesn't bother him at all that his tweets lead to these death threats. He's cool with it. Fox News, hey, we just give them the information. There's death threats. That's not our fault. Conservative talk radio, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity. Hey, we're just giving people the information. Okay. We're not responsible for what they do with it. And there's the disconnect. And they're completely cool with the fact that this is happening. Virginia Beach, another freaking mass shooting. Virginia is where the NRA is located. And the NRA has been fighting tooth and nail for years to ensure that the slaughter of innocent Americans continues. Now that sounds gross on its face, but this is clearly what the American people want. Because if they didn't, then they wouldn't be fighting for conservative politicians. They wouldn't be giving them money. They wouldn't be voting for them. And this, unfortunately, really is, I don't think it should be a political issue, but this unfortunately is. The NRA's dying. That's a whole nother subject. And I sincerely hope that happens. But after the Virginia Beach shooting, the governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, decided to get all these, they're out of session right now. The Congress in Virginia's out of, he said, come back. Why? In the Virginia legislature, background checks have been voted down. Banning high capacity magazines has been voted down. Run down the list of just normal everyday things that are non-controversial. And their legislature has voted it down after the massacre that happened with silencers and high capacity magazines. He said, get your asses back here. We've got to finally do something about this. Of course, from your conservative politicians' thoughts and prayers, which means absolutely nothing. For somebody like Ted Cruz or the president, it just means, please think of us today while all of your loved ones are being slaughtered at work. Please remember to think of us today. There's a video that was released recently from Everytown. And what it is I'm going to give you how it opens. It opens on an office. And a bunch of people are standing around. And then the boss comes in and says, hey, we're going to do a team building exercise today. And we have an expert. We have an expert on mass shootings. So it's a video. If you get a chance to see the video, great. But I'm going to actually play the audio for you here today, but I'm just setting it up. And the person that comes in that is an expert on mass shootings is an 11-year-old girl.
All right, so good morning. Welcome to today's team building event. Today, we're going to be learning what to do in the event of an active shooter. We're going to bring in a special guest. She's actually an expert on this, and she's going to be leading our team building event.
Oh, no.
This is Kaylee.
If there was an active shooter, you'd all be dead. When you talk out loud, the shooter can tell where you are and where you're hiding. Sometimes we play the game who can stay quietest the longest. So we all remember. You can try and protect your friends by pushing the tables and chairs against the doors. You also have to put a piece of paper over the door window so they can't see in. And you can't cry. It gives away your position and your hiding spot. And if you're in the bathrooms, you have to stand on the toilet seat and crunch down so they can't see your feet and they can't see your head. so they don't know that you're in there.
That's crazy.
Try to listen for things that could help the police. For example, if you hear a lot of bangs like, bang, 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 the shooter might be down the hall. Or if you hear louder ones like, bang, 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 he could be right outside your door. If the shooter comes in the room, screaming won't do anything. You have to try and fight back. If you can't escape, we get taught the emergency window escape plan, where you have to break a window, put clothes over the frame, and climb through. Our teacher used to sing a song to make it easy to remember. Lockdown, lockdown, let's all hide. Lock the doors and stay inside. Crouch on down, don't make a sound, and don't cry or you'll be found.
The thing that you don't see when I play the audio is that people in the video that are watching, that are listening, are all starting to cry. They're choking back tears. This is an 11-year-old, and she's got PTSD, and she sounds as if she goes to a war zone every day. And this is what you're fighting for. Now, forgive me, and I've done this for a long time on this show by saying you, like I'm personalizing it to you. Please forgive me. If you listen to the show, the overwhelming odds are that you're with me on this subject. Because I don't mean to personalize it to you, even though I do that with some frequency. But what I do want you to understand is the folks around you, maybe your family members, maybe your friends, who continue to vote for this brand of conservative politician. If you've got an aunt or an uncle that is fighting for a conservative politician, this is what they're fighting for. If you know somebody that can't afford to go to college or has racked up hundreds of thousands of dollars in school debt, which cannot be discharged ever, you know someone that votes for conservative politicians, that's what they're fighting for. The fact that our schools are war zones now. I thought guns were supposed to protect. The fact that our schools are war zones now. Even the people that you know and people that I know. I talk about this stuff. I talk about it to the point that, well, the conservative people that know me don't want to be around me anymore. It's a shame. Because I'm always willing to talk. I'm always down to talk. But there are some folks that do not want to hear anything from outside of the echo chamber that they live in. There's something we can do about this. Something that we can change. It doesn't have to be this way. I've made mention any number of times here that my wife and all my kids go to school every day. The shooting ranges, United States public schools, are now shooting ranges. My family go to shooting ranges every day. And the little area, the little red line that you're not supposed to cross, see, when they cross the threshold of that building, they cross that red line. You know, when you go into a shooting range, you got the very, very small box that everybody stands in, and then they shoot over the red line. Outside of that box, because what's outside of that are paper targets or clay targets, and they shoot outside there all the time to test their accuracy with a weapon. I feel like when my family go to these schools every day, they're walking over that red line and they're putting their lives at risk, and that's not the kind of thing that I or you or anybody that we know or love should have to think about. I've hammered on this for 7 years on this show. My teeny tiny voice isn't doing anything. My teeny tiny show isn't doing anything. But if I can reach even just a handful of people and say, this isn't normal, this isn't okay, this is effing gross, and this is not always the way that it's been, maybe, just maybe, I can get you to help spread that message. it's unlikely that my generation will ever know what normal was before the NRA took over. But whether I realize it in my lifetime or not doesn't mean that I shouldn't be fighting for it. So I am. So whether it happens now, in my lifetime, the lifetime of my children, or sometime after that, it's worth fighting for it now, even if I never, ever see the results of it.
When elected President of the United States, I am prepared to give the United States Congress 100 days to pull their act together and put a bill on my table. I am also prepared, and I'm announcing it for the first time today here with you, to take executive action to ban the import of assault weapons into our country.
The shooting that happened in Florida at Stoneman Douglas High School. This week, the resource officer, who's also an ex-deputy, who was at the school that day and who was armed, was charged. Something like a dozen different charges. He's in his 60s, and he's looking at 90 years in prison now. And the parents of the kids who were murdered in that school, and even some of the students who were either injured or saw their friends murdered or who were almost injured, a whole bunch of them hit the internet this week with their videos about how relieved that they are that this resource officer is going to get it, is going to get what's coming to him because he did not engage the shooter. Yes, it was his job to be at the school. Yes, he was armed. So he arguably had the tool that he needed to engage this shooter. Yes, he could have saved lives. But think about it another way. They're passing the buck. It's on this guy. Rather than on the NRA that has been fighting for these loose gun laws that allowed this child to get a gun in his hands, allowed him to get a lot of ammunition, allowed him to get a high-capacity magazine, and then allowed him to carry out this mass slaughter. Rather than going after them, they're going after the resource officer. Rather than going after the supposedly pro-life politicians that fought for the right for this kid, and they call it a right to get his hands on a weapon, get his hands on these magazines, get his hands on this ammunition, get his hands on these killing machines. Rather than go after them, let's go after the resource officer. See, the teachers are also told to stand and fight. You know, to fight back. Engage and fight back. Like that little girl said in that video. Screaming won't do anything. You have to fight back. And this is what they're told. The teachers are told. This is what my wife is told. You have to fight back. And my kids at schools, they have active shooter drills. What the hell is that? So hearing about this resource officer, my wife says to me, so if there's a shooter and say I'm in a classroom and I'm hunkered down and I'm protecting a bunch of kids and the shooter comes in and I try to escape or I try to escape with the kids or I decide not to take incoming fire from the school shooter. She says, can I be held accountable like this resource officer? I would love to tell her no, but I fear that the answer is yes. We already don't pay our teachers enough. We don't give them the money that they need. We don't give them the support that they need. Parents definitely aren't great to teachers at all. When something goes wrong with their kid, they generally blame the teachers. You listen to conservative talk radio, they are hammering on teachers all day long. I heard a conservative, it's Julio on Twitter, say that teachers work 6 hours a day, make over $100,000 a year, and they get the summers off. That's what they're saying about you as educators, which is not true. My wife does not make that much. She's not even made close to that much. And they just fought for a raise and they still don't make that much. And they work far more than that many hours a day. And they don't really get the summers off. They stay there longer than the kids do. They come back before the kids do. and they have to do continuing education generally over at least some part of the summer. But that's what they're being told, that you make a gang of money as a teacher, and that it's now because of how important the NRA is, because of how important these murder weapons are, it is now your job to be a human shield if somebody decides, some white guy decides to come into your school and kill as many people as possible. It is now your job to be a human shield. I see my sister probably twice a year, and I got to see her recently, and she asked me, hey, you're winding down. How are you going to end at least this leg of the show? You know, the show could come back in the future, but, you know, wrapping it up at 300 for the time being. She goes, how are you going to wrap up? What's going to be the last show that you do? It's not about the last show that I do, but what it is about is these last couple shows. And I said, over the last couple shows, I'm going to, like I've always done, the values, the things that I hold dear, the things that are important to me that should be important to everybody that lives and breathes and eats food. Everybody, the values, these very, very important things, these are the things that I'm going to promote in the final days of this program. Because if these end up being the last shows that I do, either because I just don't decide to start the show back up or because I get murdered in a mass shooting, these are the things I want people to know that I did, that I fought for. These are the things that were important to me. And it's not selfish. These things really should be important to you as well.
I'd also like you to get back to me, if you don't mind, to explain the disparity in REO rates. Do you know what an REO is?
An Oreo?
Not an Oreo. An REO. REO.
Real estate?
What's the O stand for?
E-organization.
Owned. Real estate owned.
You're getting way down in the weeds here.
And yeah, because it's real American people are out of their houses. So they are literally in the weeds when they are foreclosed on.
Understood. And I'm very happy to put you in contact with the people who deal with that. If I got down in the weeds on every issue, I wouldn't get very far.
Oh, God, that's Ben Carson, who is the head of Housing and Urban Development, commonly known as HUD. So the term real estate owned, or REO, as you heard there, is a term used in the U.S. to describe a class of property by a lender, typically a bank, government agency, or government loan insurer, after an unsuccessful sale at foreclosure or auction. So these people have had these things foreclosed on them, and they are owned by the bank or by a government agency. And that's Representative Katie Porter. She asked Ben Carson about these at a hearing, and he doesn't know what they are. Why? Because he knows nothing about housing and urban development. Why? Because he was put in this job by Donald Trump, and Donald Trump just doesn't care. Only the best people, remember? So we wonder, how do these people get these jobs that they're not qualified? How does Trump become president when he's clearly not qualified? What we expect from one another and what we expect from government has been being chipped away at for a whole lot of years now. Ronald Reagan really took the reins on this when he ran for president. And he sang that song the conservatives love to hear about, government stupid, government can't do anything right. The worst 11 words in the English language are I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. Blah, 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 blah. And so when things go wrong with the government, you wait too long at the DMV, or it takes too long to get, you know, your tax return, you know, goddamn government, blah, blah, blah. And that's what everybody just thinks. But it doesn't have to be that way. It is that way, though, because of us. because of what we have decided is important. I heard a discussion recently about how Joe Biden is supposedly the front runner, which, by the way, he's probably going to lose here pretty quickly because A, he's caught up in another plagiarism scandal, and B, he's the only candidate, at least in the top tier, that says that he wants to see the Hyde Amendment repealed. When asked why people are voting for Uncle Joe when there's 25 other people in the field, they say, A, he's got the best chance of beating Donald Trump. Well, that doesn't have anything to do with policy. He's got name recognition. That doesn't have anything to do with policy. Policy. Policy is why you should be voting for these people. See, Donald Trump knew nothing about policy either, but he knew the slogans. He knew all of the right-wing talking points because he was talking with Sean Hannity. He was talking with Alex Jones. He was talking with Rush Limbaugh, and he learned the language. And then he got out and he simply re-delivered that language. And when conservatives heard him re-deliver that language, they go, oh my God, I can relate to you so much. It's not policy. They just know him. He's got name recognition, and he's telling them what they want to hear. It's not policy, see? And we're not picking politicians based on policy. See, because if we were, we wouldn't end up with somebody like Ben Carson. We wouldn't end up with Jared Kushner in charge of Middle East peace. I think even worse than Donald Trump as president, which makes no sense to begin with, Jared Kushner. Zero, less than zero qualifications to be in charge of Middle East peace. But how do we get here? We get here because of us. We get here because we decide to pick the wrong politicians for the wrong reasons. But there's also a larger issue. Money in politics is a real live thing. And so much of what we get out of our politicians is because of a structural problem. I was listening to Eric Swalwell talk recently, and Eric Swalwell said, if you take a courageous stance, then you're going to be kicked out. See, we have to dance to the tune of the billionaires that own Congress. You don't own Congress, you and me. We don't. The billionaires own Congress. See, and if you say the wrong thing in Congress, then they will find a primary challenger who's going to give the billionaires exactly what they want. And they're going to spend unlimited amounts of money on you, which they are now allowed to do because of Citizens United and McCutcheon and a whole bunch of other Supreme Court decisions that gave more power to billionaires than it does to you. He says if someone takes a courageous stance, they will be out. So the conservative politicians that pick these Supreme Court justices that always vote with the billionaires, that's also on us. Why? Well, because we either decided to not turn out to make sure that good people get in there, or even worse, we voted for the horrible politicians that put these guys, that put Brett Kavanaugh, a credibly accused rapist, on the Supreme Court. And why? Because this country decided that they were just uninspired and they just can't vote for a woman. If you're grossed out by the election, that's fine. We're all grossed out by the elections. Increasingly, even myself. But I still engage because not doing anything, you know, doing nothing is far worse.
You know, Mr. Carson, yesterday when I got back to my office, he had a package of Oreos delivered to me. Mm. But what I want from Mr. Carson is answers for the American people.
Yeah, he seemed to be reveling in this. He even tweeted out the package of Oreos as if it was a fun, light moment and not one that revealed his complete lack of understanding of his job. Do you think Secretary Carson should be in that position? Let me just put it to you flatly.
No, I do not.
So that's Representative Katie Porter appearing on the Morning Joe program saying, yeah, even after that stunning display of ignorance, he thought it'd be funny to send a pack of Oreos to my office. So the headline here from a long form investigation from USA Today is called Copy, Paste, and Legislate. You elected them to write new laws. They're letting corporations do it instead. Quoting here, each year, lawmakers, state lawmakers across the U.S. introduce thousands of bills dreamed up and written by corporations, industry groups, and think tanks. Disguised as the work of lawmakers, these so-called model bills get copied in one state capitol after another, quietly advancing the agenda of the people who write them, who are not your legislators, by the way. A two-year investigation by USA Today, the Arizona Republican, the Center for Public Integrity, reveals that the first time the extent to which special interests have infiltrated state legislatures using model legislation. USA Today and the Republic found that at least 10,000 bills, almost entirely copied from model legislation, were introduced nationwide in the past 8 years. Of more than 2,100 of those bills were signed into law. The investigation examined nearly 1 million bills in all 50 states in Congress using a computer algorithm developed to detect similarities in language. That search, powered by the equivalent of 150 computers that ran nonstop for months, compared known model legislation with bills introduced by lawmakers. The phenomenon of copycat legislation is far larger. In a separate analysis, the Center for Public Integrity identified tens of thousands of bills with identical phrases, then traced the origins of that language in dozens of those bills across the country. Model bills passed into law have made it harder for injured consumers to sue corporations. They've called for taxes on sugar-laden drinks. They've limited access to abortion and restricted the rights of protesters. In all, these copycat bills amount to the nation's largest unreported special interest campaign, driving agendas in every state house and touching nearly every area of public policy. So, here's what I hear.
We need term limits. Oh, this is a real thing. We need term limits. We need term limits.
So, term limits for politicians. If we have term limits, let me explain you something. FDR was president for four terms. And after that happened, the Republicans, as they've long realized, could be out of power permanently if that kind of thing keeps happening. So, they pushed for a constitutional amendment. A constitutional amendment to limit the president to two terms. No more of this four-term stuff. No more of this helping working people crap. Then, after Ronald Reagan became president and won his second term in like a 49-state landslide, they decided they weren't so hot on term limits anymore. Remember how we started off the show? It's okay for them, but not okay for us. And fortunately, or unfortunately for them, they weren't able to overturn the law that they had that they wanted to use against Democrats. So they weren't able to do it. So the president is limited to two terms. I don't believe in term limits. I don't believe in term limits in any respect. So the way I've heard it explained before that makes the most amount of sense to me is when you give a politician a term limit, let's say somebody like AOC. Okay, when AOC showed up to Washington, D.C., she did not just walk in there and start legislating. She went around to all the old dogs, all the people that have been there for a long time, and said, "Y'all, how do you do this?" Of course, she didn't talk like that. I talk like that. And then they kind of took her under their wing and said, "Well, here's how we do this, and here's how we do that, and here's what we do every day, and here's how this goes." Okay, if we have term limits, and the House of Representatives comes up every single member of the House of Representatives, 435 members, okay, and one-third of the Senate, so about 30-some members every 2 years. If we have term limits, and I don't mind that they have terms, but term limits, well, then the institutional knowledge becomes not the politicians that have been there for a while that might be trying to do the people's work. The institutional knowledge becomes the lobbyists. Why? Well, because there's not a lot of rules on lobbying. And lobbyists are not there serving a term. They're there working on behalf of some nonprofit group or some greedy multinational corporation. And so the people that are willing to take the new folks under their wings, if you do not like the fact that the lawmakers that you send to your state house, the lawmakers that you send to DC are not doing your business, are not doing your bidding, well, think of that times 10, because there are thousands of lobbyists in Washington, DC. Thousands of lobbyists. And they're not going to be term limited. And when you send your member of Congress to D.C., you send them to the State House. The people that are going to greet them and tell them how things go are the lobbyists. Hey, welcome to D.C. You're supposed to give me this law that benefits only this corporation that I am lobbying for and hurts your constituents. That's what you're supposed to do for me. Does that sound like a fabulous idea? Quoting from the article again, USA Today's investigation found models are drafted with deceptive titles and descriptions to disguise their true intent. The Asbestos Transparency Act does not help people exposed to asbestos. It was written by corporations who wanted to make it harder for victims to recoup money. The HOPE Act, introduced in 9 states, was written by a conservative advocacy group to make it more difficult for people to get food stamps. Special interests sometimes work to create the illusion of expert endorsements, public consensus, or grassroots supports. One man testified as an expert in 13 states to support a bill that makes it more difficult to sue for asbestos exposure. In several states, lawmakers weren't told that he was a member of the organization and wrote the model legislation on behalf of the asbestos industry and the American Legislative Exchange Council. This is Alec. So Alec, just like I said, the American Legislative Exchange Council, what they do is they convene every year. It's like once or twice a year. And to be a member of ALEC, to be a congressional member of ALEC, it costs you, I think, $50, like no money at all, okay? But if you want to be one of the people that gets your legislation in front of the members, and by the way, everybody in ALEC is a conservative. This is 100%. 100% of the congressional members of ALEC are conservative politicians. There are no Democrats. There are no progressives, okay? It is hardcore Republicans and libertarians, and that's who's in there. So the congressional members pay $50 to be in there, and then the lobbyists that want to get in to push their legislation in front of them pay somewhere like $25,000 or $50,000. But they go in there and they put it in front of this conservative member. He takes it back to his home state, or he takes it back to D.C. He introduces it. He calls it his law, and it gets passed. That's what ALEC is, and that's gross. A Democrat. It's a very big story a number of years back. A Democrat tried, and actually he did. He got into ALEC for a little bit. He got into the ALEC meeting. He paid the money. He went to the ALEC meeting, and he was in the room for a little while before ALEC, the people at ALEC caught on to the fact that he was a Democrat. They gave him back his money. They yanked his registration, and they told him, GTFO, you're not allowed to be here. It's only a conservative thing, 100%, that this kind of thing happens, that your democracy is for sale, that your legislator is for sale, 100% of conservative. And hey, if you have, and you can look this up, and by the way, this is the Koch brothers. ALEC is a Koch brother thing. Look up your politician. If you're representative by a conservative, and I am, look it up. And you'll very likely find out that they are not just a member of ALEC, but that they are introducing those bills written by lobbyists for very specific corporations. Bills that are meant to injure you, that are meant to hurt you. Look them up. Your conservative politician, there's an overwhelming odd that they are a member of ALEC. And that should piss you off. Continuing here, bills copied from model legislation have been used to overwrite the will of local voters and their elected leaders. Citizens and counties have raised the minimum wage, banned plastic bags, destroyed seized guns, only to have industry groups that oppose such measures make them illegal with model bills passed in state legislatures. Among them, Airbnb has supported the conservative Arizona-based Goldwater Institute, which pushed model bills to strike down local laws limiting short-term rentals in residential neighborhoods in 4 states. Industry groups have an extraordinary success pushing copycat bills that benefit themselves. More than 4,000 such measures were introduced during the period analyzed by USA Today in the Arizona Republic. One that passed in Wisconsin limited pain and suffering compensation for injured nursing home residents, restricting payouts to lost wages, which the elderly residents don't have. Government isn't stupid. Government isn't bad. But democracy is being bought and sold right under your nose. And if you support a conservative politician with your votes and or your money, this is what you're fighting for. Quoting here from an article by over at CNBC, people are fleeing the U.S. to keep from paying off their student loans. So there was a bill passed, a bankruptcy bill passed back in 2006. And by the way, Joe Biden helped write this bill. Ugh. And what it said was that you cannot discharge your school loans. Once again, you can declare bankruptcy. Okay, you can still do that. And it'll destroy your credit for 8 years or 7 years or whatever it is. But even after that's all over, you start getting your credit, the student loans are still there. Why did they do this? To guarantee loans to these super rich, super powerful banks. They don't care about you. So then they convince you to go to college. They convince you to take out all this money, and then you end up with $100,000, $200,000 in loans, and then you get out and you can't get a job or you can't make any headway on your loans. And so the students go into default, and they start getting their wages garnished, if they're even working. But something else has happened. Students have decided to just leave the country. Why? Because the laws don't reach outside the country. Hey, this is something that, unfortunately, there's a Democrat that's got his name on that bill too, that took away your right to discharge your student loans through bankruptcy. But once again, this was overwhelmingly a conservative idea that George W. Bush just loved and gleefully signed his name to back during the aughts.
Well, it seems, in fact, to have been crafted by the Justice Department to send a signal to the American press that they, too, are vulnerable for the same things that Julian Assange is accused of doing. Now, I speak as someone who really despises Julian Assange and WikiLeaks and the role they've played, and I think he should be locked up for crimes. But to charge him under the Espionage Act is to really point a loaded gun at American journalism as a whole, because the very things, as you said in your setup, that he stands accused of doing are basically the bread and butter of American journalism. American journalists gather secrets, then they disseminate them, mm-hmm. and they do it in a pattern, and that's what he's...
So, Julian Assange. What Julian Assange did was illegal, okay? The stealing of documents, the dissemination of documents. What Julian Assange did was illegal. The theft of those government documents was illegal. Okay, and he wasn't supposed to release them to the public either. But understand this. If the government wants to go after him for the theft of these documents, okay, that's fine. But that's not what they're going after him for. They're going after him for the release. Just for the release of the documents. Not hacking into to government servers, but for releasing the documents. Now, this may seem like a small thing. It may seem like a minor detail. But there's a reason why this is being done. And it's not being lost on American journalists. See, American journalists have sources. And one of the things that's important for American journalists to do is to keep those sources secret. Okay, they find out information. Information that they're not supposed to have. They take that information to the people and they protect their sources. But the fact that the Trump administration is going after Assange after accepting all of his help, by the way, during the 2016 election and praising him from the stage while he was on the road, they're going after him just for the dissemination of the information. Why? As a warning to journalists. If you come into information that might not be friendly for us, that might not be good for us, you better not let people know about it. Why? Because if you do let people know about it, we will be coming after you. And if you do not give up your sources, then we will be going after you. This administration is champing at the bit to start locking up journalists. And this thing that they're doing with Julian Assange right now, this is their first step forward to letting you know that, hey, that whole First Amendment thing, not here in America, bucko.
To me, the conduct was obviously impeachable. So then the question is, do you then move forward with impeachment proceedings? And my biggest concern, I thought about this for a long time. Like I said, I spent a month reviewing, analyzing, thinking about it. And I am concerned that we've gotten to the point where impeachment may never be used in any circumstance. And I think that is a greater risk than the risk that it will be used too often.
My member of Congress, Jamie Herrera Butler, is a frightened pile of chicken crap. She will not have a meeting with her constituents. There is arguably nobody more high profile in the House of Representatives right now than Representative Justin Amash, who is a conservative. And why? Why is he in trouble? Why is he high profile all of a sudden when most of us had never even heard of him a couple of weeks ago? The reason why is because he, as a conservative, has went ahead and read the Mueller report and said, holy hell, the president broke the law like 1,000 times and decided to say so as a conservative. And the president accused him of helping the other side. You mean the law-abiding side? But even with all of that, going home to his very conservative district, he decided to hold a town hall and talk with his constituents just the same. And he did not know how that was going to go. And he was largely, very overwhelmingly, greeted with people that agreed with him and even gave him a few standing ovations.
I do think that it is more dangerous for our country to allow a president to mislead people, make things up. As an example, in the Mueller report, he asked the White House counsel to create a false record. Things like that to basically mislead people about a statement he had made. Things like that, to me, reflect incredible dishonesty and really harm the office of the presidency. And I don't think that you can just let that stuff go and say, hey, it's no big deal, we're going to have an election in 2 years, and just let it go. I think you have to have proceedings to deter this kind of conduct, even if ultimately the person is not convicted.
Overwhelmingly, I keep hearing, even from progressive sources, there's just not enough support for impeachment. Even the Speaker of the House, there's not enough support for impeachment. That's a conservative district. I understand it's a conservative district in California, but it's still a very conservative district. And they sent a very conservative member of Congress, not a Democrat, a libertarian, no less, to Congress. And they are saying, hey, yeah, this guy broke the freaking law. But not everybody. Not every one of his constituents was cool with the fact that he decided to tell the truth and break their little conservative hearts.
You don't have proof of corrupt intent. You don't.
That's not what the Mueller report says.
And you also further know that impeachment would tear this country apart if it went through and he was removed from office. It would cause a political upheaval in this country people in this generation have never seen before. Possible civil war.
We can't let conduct like that go unchecked.
Civil war. Oh, yeah. Yeah, she said, no, don't do this. Don't tell me things I don't want to hear because I will start shooting people. That's a problem. Okay, to say that you can't remove... There would be political upheaval. Well, yeah, we're grown-ups. Can we not handle this? Justin Amash is now, and by the way, he's got Betsy DeVos. Her family, he was speaking in the DeVos Center. And with the DeVos name right behind him when he was speaking. It was pretty amazing. And the DeVos family, Betsy DeVos's family, who gives tons of money to only conservative politicians, has said that they are cutting him off right now. That's not the way it's supposed to work. If his constituents like him, he's supposed to be able to keep serving. He's supposed to be able to go back. But the way it really works right now is that billionaires pick the people that get to go. And the DeVos family has said not only are they going to cut him off, not give him any more money, but they're going to find a primary challenger and they're going to begin just shoveling money at that primary challenger, because how dare he tell the truth, go off script, and say things to his constituents that the DeVos family doesn't want him to say.
You know, there are a lot of protections here for a president, but we should expect the president to uphold the law, to have the highest standard more than anyone else.
I'm not going to vote for Justin Amash. I'm not even going to have the opportunity to, but I don't know that I would anyway, because I promise you that he and I have a lot of policy differences. But when it comes to the fact that we can agree on facts, not things that are made up, not things that are talking points, but when we can agree on facts, that's a better place to start. That's a better place to go. If you and I can at least agree on the freaking facts, then you and I can start a dialogue. You and I can move forward on here. And I'm not going to get everything I want. You're not going to get everything that you want. But if we simply agree on the facts, then it's very likely that we're going to get to a place that we both want to be, a place that makes sense and a place that's going to be helpful for everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is TFY. CPO.podbean.com. Still got a Facebook page over there, and we always will. I want to thank everybody for listening to us. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at TFYCPO@gmail.com. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin. Always, Kevin. Thank you for producing, and I want to thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off, and now that I've woken you up, good morning.